Welcome to the Small Batch edition of Pop Culture Happy Hour, NPR's podcast about what we are watching, reading, and listening to. I'm Glenn Weldon. I write about books and comic books for the NPR website. I'm joined here by Chris Klimek. Chris, what do you do when you're not appearing on Small Batch episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour?
I write about movies for NPR and The Dissolve and The Village Voice and other places.
Yes, you do. Mad Max, Fury Road, opened as we tape this last weekend, kind of got itself beaten up and its lunch money stolen by a plucky gang of toe-tapping young gals
we'll see.
In their hearts.
I think word of mouth is going to help this movie more than it helps the one with the two-thirds as high tomato meter score.
Okay. So what I'm saying is that Pitch Perfect 2 trounced Mad Max in theaters this weekend.
Perhaps ACCA trounced.
Perhaps, if you swing that way. But don't worry about Max. He'll be fine. I think you're right about word of mouth, because we'll get to that. But there's been tremendous word of mouth for this film. So this is the continuation. You'd agree with me, not the reboot, not the revamp, not the retcon.
This is the fourth ongoing sequel, the third sequel to Mad Max.
Okay. As you say, this is the continuation of a franchise begun in 1979 by Australian director, writer, producer George Miller, and concluded, for all intents and purposes, in 1985. So before we talk about Mad Max Fury Road, Chris, let's talk a little bit about that franchise, those three films, Mad Max, Mad Max 2, which was called The Road Warrior here
in the
States,
US, yeah.
And Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. Let's talk about that series sort of writ large, what it's about. And then talk a little bit about your personal relationship with that franchise, because you must have been in knee pants when they came out.
I was in leather knee pants. That's right, with spikes on them.
Yep.
So the series is set after some unspecified apocalypse. I think we can infer nuclear exchange. I believe The Road Warrior has a short prologue, but that still keeps it pretty nonspecific as to how the world crumbled and we reverted to this sort of violent tribal society. The world building is quite sparse in these films, and that's one of the things that I've always liked about it, is we, you know, we're sort of left to infer what sort of calamity got us to this place. You know, and The Road Warrior is the only one that I think really you need to see if you like the genre or action films. I think just as a specimen of terse storytelling, pacing, suspense, it's really masterful. I think the other two are kind of just okay.
Well, I never saw any of these films. I have no personal connection to these films. This franchise is basically the hair metal of cinema, the Dokken of cinema, if you will. Very self-serious, full of bombast, so convinced of its own transgressiveness, so convinced that it is shocking that it comes out being pretty quaint and square, and not to put too fine a point on it, cheesy. You could try to power wash the cheese off of this franchise and you get nothing but cheese. It's solid good all the way through. The other thing that I noticed about this franchise is it belongs to the tradition of the American Western in which a stoic loner is driven into action by the cruel mistreatment of a woman or a child or a little puppy dog. Or in the case of this particular franchise, all three.
I think, yes.
All three of them. So, now, this is my way of saying that I went into this movie, Fury Road, with very low expectations.
You know, this has been in production for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And didn't, you know, even when it finally, after many delays, started shooting, that was 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'd heard word about how Miller had this commitment to practical stunts and effects and, you know, had built this fleet of bizarre art cars in the, you know, in the desert, and was pushing them around out there like Lawrence of Arabia. So I was intrigued more than I was eager, I guess.
And then you saw it, and you wrote a very positive and very good review for NPR.org, and you joined a chorus of very positive critical reaction to this film. I mean, fawning is going too far, but the word masterpiece is being tossed around among certain circles. So talk to me about Mad Max Fury Road.
Furiosa, played by Charlize Theron, is trying to help the five slave wives of the warlord Immortan Joe escape. She sort of accidentally crosses paths with Max Rakitansky. I don't think we say his last name in this movie, but when his name is Rakitansky, I want to say it as frequently as possible. And that's it. They find that their interests briefly intersect, and he ends up helping them out. But it's really Furiosa who is driving the truck and driving the movie.
Yeah.
I think we're refreshed to see an action-adventure film where one character is not constantly explaining to the other what their objective is and what's going on. I understand that this film was reshaped continually through test screenings, which it usually, you know, purports problems, and that there was some concern over how little dialogue there is in this film.
Yeah.
So this entire movie, this would be like the third act of any other action film, it seems. We just get here very late. You know, Furiosa has already decided that she is going to jeopardize her place in the society, you know, risk the wrath of a Morton Joe and to help these ladies.
I dug this film a lot because it is wicked awesome. It is just gorgeous to look at. And that is not something you can say about a lot of action films. I'm talking about the cinematography. I'm talking about the design work that's going on here. You know, there is a skyward scream in this film. One of the characters, not saying who, falls to his or her knees and goes, ah, which is the thing I do not need to see in any movies anymore, ever. And it's beautiful because it's on top of a dune and all kind of stuff is going on around him or her. I talk a lot about the difference between spectacle and action. Action is when you can locate the human body in the frame, and what's going on screen is you can feel the stakes because people are being put in jeopardy. You worry about the actor, the stunt person, the character, and your reaction is emotional. Your reaction is visceral. In spectacle, your reaction is purely intellectual. You think, that looks great. I wonder how much that cost. For the first time in this film, they come together because all the stunts in this film are breathtaking and kinetic and amazing. And all these things are happening at 100 miles an hour on trucks and cars, which are filled with metal and sharpness and rust. It's like tetanus on wheels, this thing. It's terrifying.
There is a real sense of risk and jeopardy to this thing that has largely disappeared from action movies in the digital era, the green screen era.
One of the cars that is in the War Armada is one that is just basically has war drums. The other one, another one, has a dude shredding on electric guitar in a sling with a guitar that shoots flames.
That makes sense.
It does. It's like I saw that and I started grinning ear to ear because it's like, dude, I am so happy for you. This is the quintessence of these films. This is what you want out of these films. This is exactly what you as a director were hoping for, striving for. You have defined it, and here it is. There is also in this film, as you've discussed, Charlize Theron's Furiosa, who, for my money, adds to this film an energy, a layer of meaning, a layer of humanity, which is exactly what those first three films just completely lacked for me.
Yeah, I think, I mean, Mad Max has always been sort of a marginal character in these movies. He is he's the man with no name. He's this enigmatic figure who sort of drifts in from the sidelines and vanishes again at the end. And I always like that presentation of the character as this figure of legend, you know, so that which could explain any number of things. It could explain why he looks like Tom Hardy now when he used to look like Mel Gibson. And they kind of do away with that in this one a little bit because the brief narration we get at the beginning is from Max himself.
Yep. Now, we have to touch on this, at least, as we close. This film has been talked about in its early reviews as a feminist parable. There has been some pushback from feminists saying, no, it really isn't. And so right now, I think a good way to spend our time, Chris, is for you and me, two dudes, to sit here and decide once and for all whether or not this film is feminist.
Agree. Yes.
I can say...
That's mansplaining to everyone.
Exactly. Here's what you need to think. What's your thoughts on this?
I was sort of surprised that the film was able to get away with making the wives of Immortan Joe its MacGuffin. You know, that seems like just too toxic a subject for a big presumptive blockbuster like this to touch. But it's executed in a... Well, I don't want to say tasteful. I'm not sure what the word is. A responsible way, maybe. The fact that Miller, as has been widely reported, brought Eve Ensler in and had her meet with the cast and talk to them about the experience of being a victim of sexual violence in conflict zones. And, that's a level of rigor brought to a blockbuster that... It sure is welcome, you know, if you're going to... We've seen, thousands of years of societies where... women are, sadly, they're a property, That's it's just sort of acknowledging that this is just a sad fact of human history.
Yeah. It does embrace a lot of feminist ideas. In my humble opinion, it doesn't execute them fully, but there have been a lot of really good writers on this topic that I think we should link to who have been writing about this and kind of going back and forth on this and changing my mind with everything I read. Full episodes of Pop Culture Happy Hour are available every Friday on iTunes or from your favorite podcast provider or at npr.org. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you, Glenn.